Under the provisions of Section 284 of the Commonwealth Electoral Act, I declare Chris Crowther duly elected as a member to serve in the House of Representatives of the Parliament of the Commonwealth of Australia for the Division of Dunkley.
Thank you.
Welcome to another packed edition of Eye on the Peninsula this Tuesday, the 26th of July, officially declaring Mr. Chris Crowther as the newly elected Federal Liberal Member for Dunkley. More on Mr. Crowther's speech later in the program. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from the RPPFM studios in Mornington. Today we focus on mental health issues with the ambassador for the new Kindred Clubhouse in Frankston and a committee member. And we speak to Ita Buttrose about a prize awarded to people who work in the mental health industry. We speak to the man who started the campaign to change the name of Rosebud West to Capel Sound, which looks like going ahead. Bri's ward councillors held a community meeting, updates soon. We learn about a literacy program set up in Hastings to get young children reading. And ladies, listen up and find out where you can get rid of your old bras for a good cause. But now, time to look at some local headlines across the Mornington Peninsula from Brendan Telfer.
Parks Victoria has come to the defence of the design and integrity of the Mornington Pier after it was closed last week after only 10 months following a major rebuild. Winter storms in early July damaged 9 way panels and forced the closure of the outer section of the $15.3 million structure. Spokesperson for Parks Victoria telling the Leader, Parks Victoria has full confidence in the structural integrity and longevity of the pier and that it will be opened in due course. However, no opening date has yet been nominated. Locals have been critical of the design, claiming it stands broadside to the worst weather and should have been angled to dissipate the wave and tide action. And our own photographer, Rab City, recorded some amazing video and still shots of that July 12th storm with waves crashing right over the top of the pier. The Australian Electoral Office officially declared the seat of Dunkley as won by Liberal member Chris Crowther. Ceremony to take place at the Australian Electoral Commission offices in Davie Street. On final count, Mr. Crowther polled 38,358 primary votes, 42.73% of the local electorate, and finished ahead of the Labor candidate, Peter Murphy, who polled 29,620 primary votes, or 33.38% of the electorate. Greens candidate, Jeanette Swain, polled 8,621 votes, 9.65%. Frankston Council has set out its position on level crossing removal, saying both it and the community favour an under-road solution and neither will support any option that removes houses or threatens the coastal environment. Three crossings at Seaford Road in Seaford, Sky Overton Road in Frankston and Eel Race Road in Seaford have been identified for removal. Frankston Council says it will advise the Level Crossing Removal Authority of its position that also wants it to give it more visionary outcome for the Frankston Station precinct and electrification of the Baxter Line. And local divers at Blairgowrie are to hit the waters over the next couple of months to transplant a colony of sponges from the old pier wall to a new wall that's to replace it. According to Cade Miles from the Reef Watch program, sponges are an important part of the Port Phillip Bay ecosystem and if transplanted successfully will offer a colourful and important element to the new pier wall. Leader says the project is a world first and will involve divers using paint scrapers to remove 300 square metres of sponges that will be attached to the new wall using a special coral glue. And congratulations to Stipa Stoney, picked up an Amsterdam Film Festival Award for the Best Short Film Screenplay for his movie The Gift. The film addresses the subject of suicide. Mr. Bastoni is well known on the peninsula, of course, as the director of the annual Peninsula Short Film Festival.
Thank you to Brandon, presenter of the RPPFM Monday Breakfast Club, and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. Chris Crowther was officially declared the Federal Liberal Member for Dunkley after the final election count was completed last Thursday. This is part of his acceptance speech at the ceremony held at the AEC office in Frankston yesterday.
Accordingly, under the provisions of Section 284 of the Commonwealth Electoral Act, I declare Chris Crowther duly elected as a member to serve in the House of Representatives of the Parliament of the Commonwealth of Australia for the Division of Dunkley. So I now call on all the candidates. We'll start with you, Chris, to address the meeting.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you very much for everyone who's come here today. It's great to see such a wonderful turnout. So many people that are here today who helped throughout the campaign. I guess firstly start by thanking Bruce Bilson, who has been the city member for the last 20 years. And like Bruce, I want to be a very strong representative for this community, to fight hard for this community. As I've always said, balancing the best of the city, the country and the coast. It's a wonderful place to live, and I want to keep working to make it even more wonderful place into the future. I look forward to working with each and every one of you over the next 3 years to not only retain Dunkley, but to improve the margin and to ensure that we have strong representation in this seat. Each and every one of you may have ideas and input as well into the way I do things, and I really appreciate that as well. And so I guess lastly, just let's continue to win and hold Dunkley for the Liberals and for the benefit of this seat. Thank you.
Mr. Crowther took out over 38,000 votes, 42% of the primary vote, followed by Labor candidate Peter Murphy with over 29,500 votes, equaling 33%. Congratulations, Chris. We look forward to your work and support in the community. Coming up, Ita Buttrose takes us through an award that recognises the outstanding work people do in the mental health sector. And then, an ambassador and committee member reveals a new clubhouse to be launched in Frankston soon to help those dealing with a mental illness. We know a lot more about mental health and illnesses today, thanks to people who work tirelessly in the medical field. Last week, Dame Quentin Bryce launched the Australian Mental Health Prize, established by the University of New South Wales School of Psychiatry. Australian journalist, businesswoman and TV presenter Ita Buttrose, AO and OBE, has been selected as the chair of the Australian Mental Health Prize Advisory Group. Ms. Buttrose joins Deborah in conversation about her role, the stigma attached to mental illness, and acknowledging the outstanding contribution people make in the mental health sector. The latest statistics released on the number of people living with mental illnesses is frightening, Ms. Buttrose reveals.
Well, mental health is quite prevalent. And, you know, yes, we have raised the awareness, and that's fantastic, but we also need action. Yes, so we need to plan how we're going to handle the enormity that mental illness presents to us. So if you look at the figures, 1 in 5 adult Australians and 1 in 7 children aged 4 to 17 will, in any one year, experience some form of mental illness. And in our lifetimes, 1 in 3 of us will have a mental illness. You start to think, my word, that's quite a lot of us.
It's disturbing children are experiencing mental health issues.
Go back and think about those children. I mean, I was quite shocked when I learnt 1 in 7 children aged 4 to 17 in any one year will experience some form of mental illness. You know, that's a terrible figure, I feel, for children.
It is a concern when our young people want to take their own lives and actually talk about it and do act on it.
Suicide, just seeing you mention it, I mean, 2,800 Australians take their own life each year, and in men under 45, it's a top figure. Depression, it can be, you know, you don't always know the reasons why, but the figures show you that what's going on, and, you know, why are men doing this? Why do men feel such despair that the only way out is to take their own lives? We can do better than this.
In a statement, Ms. Buttrose said, "This prestigious prize will help reduce stigma and raise awareness of mental health and help improve care in Australia." That suggests we aren't doing enough.
65% of people do not access treatment to support themselves with the experience that they're going through. That very much indicates that we're not doing enough, because they're there, but somehow we're not reaching them, or they're not familiar with where they should go. And if we look at regional Australia and other rural areas, it's very hard to get help. I think it's a very important issue, and I think there is a feeling among many of us that perhaps the investment in medical research and care of people with mental illness should be increased. At the moment, the Australian health budget is about $150 billion, and at the moment, 7% of that goes to mental health. So we think that perhaps it should be lifted to 13%. There's $200 billion worth of lost days of well-being attributed to mental health in our country. $200 billion. That's an awful lot of money. The health budget is a hard budget to run. There's always people who think their cause is more important than somebody else, but there are some health conditions that have enormous funds and huge community support. Mental health still hasn't achieved that. And I think it's not unreasonable to suggest that given the caseload and the impact of mental health in Australia, that perhaps the government should have a look at where it is allocating its health budget funds.
So what's Ms. Buttrose doing about it?
We've launched the Australian Mental Health Prize, and I was selected as the chair of the advisory group. So we're hoping that the prize will not only continue to raise awareness, but will also help remove the stigma. Because by talking about the statistics, how many people are affected by mental illness, and let's remember it severely impacts on a person's capacity to work, to earn a living, to maintain a close relationship. I want people who are experiencing mental illness or who have not sought help, because about 65% of people don't seek help, I want them to realise they are not alone. There are many, many Australians who are going through what you're going through, and there is always something that can be done, and that's why it's important to seek help. And we're hoping that PRISE will refocus people's attention on that, and as well, recognise someone who's doing fantastic work in the mental health field. It might be somebody on the Mornington Peninsula who's a wonderful therapist, might be a carer.
What is the PRISE and why is it necessary, Aisha?
The PRISE is a wonderful medal which we've had specially designed. There's no money attached to this prize. It's the recognition. It's the acknowledgement of the great work that does go on in Australia. And there's some fantastic work going on here. And, you know, to know that something you're doing might be repeated in other places in Australia.
And the criteria to nominate?
It's going to be judged by a panel of, they call them eminent Australians, many of whom are working in the mental health field, doctors and scientists and so on. But it's really the impact, it'll be the impact of what they're doing that we'll be looking at.
So they have to submit a CV with 200 words outlining the work that they've undertaken?
Yes, but you can't nominate yourself. So we want people to nominate someone. And it's just 200 words with CV. And a CV. And why is it working? What's so good about it? Why is this person worthy of this award?
A final message from Ms. Buttrose about the help and support that is readily available if you or someone you know is having difficulty.
Remember what I said to you, there's lots of people who experience mental health illness and you shouldn't be ashamed of it. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that can be treated and in many instances successfully treated.
So if you'd like to nominate anyone who works hard in the mental health sector, nomination forms can be obtained from australianmentalhealthprize.org.au. Entries close on the 31st of August 2016 and the winner will be announced on the 28th of November. Up next, we'll hear about the good work being done in Frankston for people living with mental illnesses. And then Liberal member Chris Crowther discusses the work he's doing to help those people. Kindred Clubhouse is a franchise that operates around the world to support people living with a mental illness. Frankston is the next location for a Kindred Clubhouse to be set up. Kim Kerr, who's worked in other clubhouses around the world, is a committee member at the Frankston branch. He's the driving force behind the scenes and opens the discussion about the program.
The Clubhouse program operates internationally. There are 11 in Australia, but none in Victoria. It's a program model where pretty much the program is people come in and help run the place. They're people with a mental illness, actively participate, and from that participation, redevelop skills and confidence, and it's a pathway back to employment or further education. So from doing things, people learn skills, redevelop confidence, and find that things that perhaps they thought weren't possible become possible.
Why Frankston?
Frankston because the person that organised our group was working in Frankston, but went back to America for a trip and saw the clubhouse program operating. And when she returned to Australia, thought, I wonder why we're not doing one over here, and saw a need. And because she'd been working in Frankston, called a public meeting just to see if anybody else was interested. What was discussed at that meeting was the tenets of how the clubhouse program worked. And from that, we were invited to form a committee, which we did.
Is there something similar in Frankston already set up, though, for people who are dealing with a mental illness?
There are services for people with a mental illness, but mostly the services now are around a worker visiting a person with a mental illness and working one-on-one. And this model works in that it has its power, I think, in that it brings people together. People learn by being involved and being encouraged by other people's achievements, being motivated by what other people are able to do.
More public figures and sports people are sharing their mental health issues to raise awareness.
More and more, it's become okay to speak about it. More people in the public eye who've had a connection have come out and spoken about it. I think it's always been there. It seems perhaps a little less stigmatised to speak about at the moment.
What can we expect from the Kindred Clubhouse in Frankston?
Kindred at the moment isn't operating. What we've done from that public meeting is form a committee. We developed a business plan. We've now organised ourselves to have charitable status, so we can fundraise, which we've been doing. We've run forums. We've been presented it around the traps around Frankston. And now what we think is the time is right to start having this conversation with people part of a clubhouse. So we're looking to set up and operate just one day a week to start with, provide a meal and have people with a mental illness come in and talk to us about whether they think what we're proposing is going to work.
So people who will come to you with a mental illness, are they going through it or they've been through it or they're not too sure if they have a mental illness? At what point do they contact Kindred Clubhouse?
So it's open to people who've had experience with mental illness. If the conversation we're having about what we're proposing sounds attractive to them and they want to be involved, that's what will help make it happen.
And it is a group of volunteers, you said?
Initially it's volunteers, but as we move towards looking to get something that's funded and operating.
And they have to be qualified at some level?
The staff will be. The volunteers and the committee at the moment have a mix of people who've had quite a bit of experience working in mental health or have a connection with mental illness.
So what sort of activities then will you have at the clubhouse?
Clubhouse talks about having a work order day. It means that people work on projects. I'm putting a newsletter together. If you've got lots of people there providing a meal, so working in a kitchen and feeling that you've got a contribution to make, and that's the shift. What we found made a big difference was in clubhouse is they have a thing called transitional employment. And how that works is that the clubhouse goes out and negotiates with employers for entry-level work, which then they train and support people in that role. And the club, I guess, is a practice ground for that. It's places where you're putting together a resume and interview skills and how to present to an employer that everybody has skills and abilities. It just takes time to develop them.
Ebdale Community Hub in Frankston will host weekend meetings with people living with a mental illness to talk about the proposed clubhouse program. The first session is Saturday, 10th of September 2016, from 11am to 2pm. A free lunch will be provided. For more details, visit their website, kindredclubhouse.com. Kindred spelled K-I-N-D-R-E-D. Stay with us, because coming up next, we talk to the Ambassador for Kindred Clubhouse and Liberal Member for Dunkley, Chris Cruther. The Ambassador selected for Kindred Clubhouse is Beth Wilson, AM. Beth, who is the former President of the Mental Health Review Board, was the Health Service Commissioner and now works at the Mental Health Tribunal. She begins with...
So it's a complex area that I've always been interested in, and I got a call out of the blue from the good people at the Kindred Clubhouse to tell me what they were doing and to ask me if I would be interested in assisting. And I said, I think it's fantastic and I'd love to.
So why did you want to get involved?
People who suffer mental health are discriminated against and they find life really difficult at times. And one of the really big difficulties is getting employers to take people on. People can work when they've got a mental illness as long as they're getting the proper care that they need. But employers are sometimes understandably a bit nervous about it. So what the clubhouse model does is it trains people who experience mental illness up to be able to take on jobs, and it provides backup so that if they can't turn up on a particular day, one of the other members can turn up for them. So it gives employers that little bit of, you know, assurance. And if we can get people back into the workforce, then we've achieved a heap.
I don't understand why there's so many people now with a mental illness of some sort. Is that because maybe either they're able to come out now and talk about it, or have we named some other conditions that are now under the umbrella of mental health?
I think, Deborah, that you've probably hit the nail on both heads with that question, because I'm sure that those things have happened. Yes, we are more speaking about it more. People aren't hidden away in standalone asylums like we used to do before. We've now moved to a community-based model of care, and whilst it's had some shaky moments, it is improving and it's a lot better than it used to be. And most people with mental health issues live and go do well in the community. We've got really much better at providing services, you know, like medication and so on, but psychosocial needs also have to be taken into account. So many of us have someone in our family or a friend who suffered from these conditions, and they can be really puzzling and stressful, but if we understand and we've got support, it can make a huge difference.
What telltale signs present themselves for someone who might have a mental health issue?
Psychiatrists have tools where they look at clusters of symptoms and decide whether a person has, for example, a mood disorder, like bipolar affective disorder, or whether it's a disorder that affects your perception or thought, like schizophrenia. schizophrenia, the range of mental illnesses is huge. They can be temporary, like postpartum depression, postnatal depression. They can be chronic, so that people are sick a lot, or they can be episodic. So people can be functioning and working really well, but then have a period where they're not well and they need some more treatment. So it's a vast range of things that unfortunately can affect our brains and cause our mental functioning to be disturbed.
What's the first step to take if we suspect something isn't right?
If you're concerned, if you're worried, go and have a chat first of all to your local GP and say, look, you know, I don't feel like going out or feeling really anxious. That's a really good starting point. There is help available. Try and avail yourself of it.
A final message from Beth.
I just want to say that I think the Clubhouse model is really great community building. It's very inclusive. It's very successful in New South Wales and in particular Queensland. And I know that the consumers who go there and provide peer support for each other love it.
With more people coming on board to get the Kindred Clubhouse up and running in Frankston, we hope it will be fully functional within a couple of months. That website again, kindredclubhouse.com. Next, Chris Cruther on mental health. Deborah Maher took the opportunity to speak with newly elected member for Dunkley, Chris Cruther, at the official declaration held in Frankston yesterday. Mr. Cruther advises plans he has in place to deal with mental health issues in his electorate.
Did campaign very hard to ensure that we did invest in mental health and mental health services in the electorate. Some of the things that we achieved is some additional funding for South East Primary Health Network, which will flow through to Headspace, which is an important program locally here. But we also invested $5.6 million in ICE rehabilitation services, and that ICE is a big issue, not only in this community, but in communities across Australia, as well as drug use generally. So we've invested in rehabilitation services to get people back on their feet, whether it's programs like Stepping Up here in Plain Street in Frankston, or many other programs as well. We've also put together an ICE action plan, which will see greater investment in mental health, police services and other services that are needed to tackle this important issue. So it's definitely an issue that I'll fight for, more funding for, and to ensure that we are actually tackling the issue locally here in the community.
So all the funds that you've put aside for that they'll be able to use it?
Yes. So it's so the coalition has returned government, and obviously I've been declared having won the seat of Dunkley. So in that case, all of our funding that we've committed throughout the campaign is going ahead. And so I look forward to implementing that throughout the next 3 years.
What's in a name? Apparently a lot. That's why 55% of people voted in the name change for the seaside town of Rosebud West to Capel Sound. Local resident Terry Wright put the idea to residents over 18 months ago. It was favoured by a number of Shire councillors and went before the Office of Geographic Names. It's now been approved. The last step is to go back to council to finalise the detail. The RPFM Breakfast Club boys spoke to Terry last week as the news broke.
Yeah, it's looking pretty hopeful. It's probably just one more step to go, but it'll be good if it gets through. Most people are supportive. I mean, we've been really pleased the response it had, particularly when we went out to survey. The fact that people don't normally like change, and normally they push back a lot if you want to change something. But, you know, we got 55 to 46% supported it, so we were pretty pleased with that.
Terry raised a thought-provoking theory about the name Rosebud West.
People aren't that happy being an appendix hanging off somebody else, and that's why north, south, east or west, whenever you're north, south, east or west, you really don't have an identity in your own right. You're really just a location in relation to somewhere else that does have an identity. A lot of people think that things are going to change straight away, but it's about future generations. It's about 10 years and 50 years' time. We can just use as an example Macrae. Macrae used to be Dramana West. It's now got its own identity, and I'm sure that everybody there is happy that it is Macrae. St Andrews Beach, you know, it used to just be the back blocks of Rye. Well, that's now got its own identity, and really, that's what we've been lacking.
So Capel Sound, and of course historically it's got some precedent as well, but obviously you've done your homework here, Terry, because the Office of Geographic Names couldn't fault the claim, and you know, they've shoved it back to the Shire. It's now down to the Shire to make the final decision.
Yeah, that's really good.
Brendan pointed out that Terry has driven quite a campaign, efficiently and effectively. He must have some knowledge about legislation.
I've had long experience as a public servant, so I sort of do understand legislation, and I understand government, and I understand rules make things happen, I guess. Government does work. Most people go into these things with a lot of enthusiasm and passion, but they haven't stood back and sort of said, well, what do we have to do? What's the regulations or the guidelines laid down? And then work to them, and then it can become quite dispassionate. And that's where I think you're more likely to get it through quicker, but you're less likely to burn out as well, because you don't keep hitting your head against a brick wall.
What now?
The process is that council, I think, have got to just respond to a couple of things to the geographic name. I don't know what they are, and I think they're working on that at the moment. So it could be quick, it might not, but you really need to talk to them about that.
And I on the Peninsula will talk to the Shire about the next step soon in the coming weeks. Thanks to Brendan and Brody, presenters of the IPPFM Breakfast Club program, for that report. Coming up, a rewarding initiative aimed at helping young children in Hastings with literacy issues. But now, a quick update from Councillor Anne Shaw at the Briars Ward meeting held last week. What's happening in the Briars Ward? Last week, Briars Ward councillors Anne Shaw, Bev Colum and Andrew Dixon held a community meeting in Mornington. They addressed the constituents with 2015 and 2016 completed projects such as CCTV installations across the ward, Canadian Bay Road and Nepean Highway pedestrian safety, and the Mount Martha Tennis Pavilion. Shared news on current projects including Emil Madsen and Civic Reserve Master Plan, the pillars at Mount Martha, and the new rapid response team. Councillor Shaw explains the responsibilities of the new rapid response team.
Yes, that's a new initiative with the Shire, and through Downer, who's one of our contractors, we've got what we call the rapid response team. And if someone rings in and there's a graffiti issue or dumped rubbish, we've now got the first rapid response team, and looking at further ones into the future to go out and deal with these things very, very quickly, which we really look forward to seeing that and hope that that really improves some of these issues on the peninsula.
And that's right across the peninsula, just not on Briars Ward.
That's correct, yes.
And does it include big roads such as the Nepean Highway, especially near the Briars?
That is Vic Roads' responsibility through there, so I don't believe that that comes under our control, that section.
Okay.
It's a particularly hard area to clean because of the traffic, but I agree with you, sometimes it's quite awful.
The dangerous Forest Drive and Nepean Highway intersection in Mount Martha has been under the spotlight for some time. Councillor Shaw provides an update.
Yes, well, the federal government made an election commitment to put some money towards some works for Forest Drive, and this is a particularly interesting intersection. And not only is it dangerous, but it's also taking a huge amount more traffic flow than it was going back a few years. So we're very much looking forward to Vic Roads is going to be having some community consultation in Mount Martha about that intersection, and I believe also about the Urella Drive intersection, both of which have been on the radar of Mount Martha residents for a long time. So look forward to that consultation and something positive coming out of that.
Now, Greg Hunt put that forward. Now, was that because he was a member of Flinders or because he was the former Minister for Environment? And will Josh Frydenberg take it up if Greg doesn't?
Greg's a Mount Martha resident. And let me tell you, those people like Greg and I who live in Mount Martha, you just can't escape it, because it is a concern, and there have been bad accidents there. And people on a daily basis feel that they're risking their lives coming out of there. So, you know, that's where when you're a local, people don't hesitate to stop and tell you as you're walking down the street or in the supermarket about these things, and so, you know, it's great to see some action is going to happen there.
So we'll let people know through a mail drop or through your new website?
Well, I'm hoping that the Vic Roads consultation will be in the local paper, but I'm sure that we'll be putting it on the on our Shire website too, so that people are aware of that up and coming consultation.
Mount Martha residents, watch out for information in your letterbox for the upcoming Vic Roads community meeting. Also, check out the new Mornington Peninsula Shire website. Deborah Maher compiled that report.
ahead. Ladies, don't throw away those old bras. Stay tuned to hear what you can do with them to support a good cause. But now, Reading for Life, a new literacy program in Hastings. Literacy studies carried out by the Australian Early Development Census in 2009 indicated that Hastings held the lowest score in language and cognitive skills. Something had to be done. Richard Mucha, principal of St Mary's Primary School in Hastings, called upon Wallaroo Primary School in Hastings, Hastings Primary School, and locals who could volunteer their time to help with a program called Reading for Life to assist vulnerable young students in Hastings. In this report by Deborah Maher, you'll hear from principal of St Mary's Primary, Richard Mucha, Tom, a volunteer, and 11-year-old Charlotte, who was part of the Reading for Life program. Deborah begins the coverage with Richard, who provides figures released by the Australian Early Development Census.
So, developmentally vulnerable in 2009, the first year, in Victoria was 6.1% and 36.5% were developmentally vulnerable in Hastings. In 2015, Victoria had 6.3% of the prep students vulnerable when they started school, and Hastings was 17.4% vulnerable. So still not acceptable, but the trend is heading significantly in the right direction from all of the strategies that we've implemented.
Richard outlines the Reading for Life program, starting with...
And we thought, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to get what you've always got. So we knew we had to do things differently. And so we've put in a whole range of strategies. Reading for Life was one of many strategies that we have to develop literacy. So that started in 2010, this particular strategy of Reading for Life. And what happens is we have two psychologists from a firm called Learning Links. They come from Sydney, a not-for-profit. They pre-test all the students in the three primary schools in the town that we've selected for Reading for Life. And whilst they are down, they train the volunteers that we've got to work in the program. The volunteers get a kit, a little bag full of educational games, and the psychs teach them how to use those. The volunteer then works with their student for about 45 minutes to an hour for 15 sessions. And then the psychologists come back and they post-test the students so we can see their growth. And the growth is amazing.
It's paramount children with vulnerabilities are encouraged to be part of the Reading for Life program. Richard believes it takes a village to raise a child. Take a listen to what Richard says about the motto.
Students are from a whole range of families. There are students who have families are extremely supportive of their child. They help them at home, and the child just needs a little bit more of a boost, a little bit more assistance. All of the schools are already doing numerous intervention strategies to help children. But in Hastings, we just need more, and that's where Reading Life has come in. In some circumstances, the children are more problematic, and there may not always be that support that would be ideal. And that's where the idea of it takes a village to raise a child is most predominant, because the schools can't do it by themselves, families can't do it by themselves. But if we've got schools, families, volunteers, and in the businesses, because Reading for Life costs a lot of money, and we get that from the Raleigh Foundation, a philanthropic organisation, and then businesses in the town, that the whole town has come together around the children to help their development.
Who funds the program?
The bottom line is, if the child lives in this town, they are at least in part our joint responsibility. And the businesses have seen over time that this is the case. It's not about St Mary's, it's not about Wallaroo Primary, it's not about Hastings Primary, it's about the child. And so the businesses can see that, and as a result we've had great support from local businesses to make sure that the funding is there every year. The schools have never had to pay 1 cent for this program because the businesses have always got behind us.
Reading for Life is not only about children and literacy, it's about building relationships, as Richard explains.
The children love it because everyone likes to have someone to talk to. And all of us, adults, everybody does. And so here is another adult that the children have who says, I'm going to be there, for example, at Wednesday at 11 o'clock, and they can count on that person. They will be there at 11 o'clock. So a great relationship develops between the student and their volunteer. Once the 15 sessions are over, a number of the volunteers keep working with that child. Coming each week, working with that child, woodwork and various other things as a good role model. And that's the other thing that we found. We started Reading for Life to improve the literacy amongst students in our town, and it's done that spectacularly. What we very quickly realised was that it has at least an equal benefit on children's aspirations. Now, some of the children already have high aspirations, but if a child comes from a family where they don't know anybody who works, there's a certain environment perhaps in that household. And by working with these volunteers who are retired folk generally, or many student teachers, they are people who have been successful in life or are aspiring to success in life. And they are working one-on-one with the children, and that gives the child another avenue of hope.
Richard says he cannot cater for the number of volunteers who have put their name down this year. 60 students from Hastings will start the literacy program this year, and more than 60 volunteers have registered. Volunteers come from all parts of the Catholic sector and other parts of the community, stretching from Mount Eliza, Mornington, Balnarring and Hastings. Richard invites anyone interested in volunteering for next year's intake to contact either St Mary's Primary School in Hastings, Wallaroo Primary or Hastings Primary.
Everyone is welcome, because anyone can do it. You don't have to be a teacher. You don't have to have an education background. The training takes 3 hours, and you receive the games and you receive a manual. And really, you follow the manual step by step, and so anyone can do that. Everyone, of course, working within schools must have a working with children check. You can get it online, but the schools can help you with that if you want to volunteer but you're not sure how to get the working with children check.
Tom from Balnarring sums up his experience as a volunteer.
I have been involved with St Mary's, but I do volunteer reading at Wallaroo, the other school, and I'm going there to do Reading for Life this year. Why is it important to me? Well, there was an appeal for help initially, and I thought, well, I've got time on my hands, I can go and do this. So I sat with my first little boy, and he was very nervous, and I was nervous as well. After a period of time, we got used to one another, and I saw his development. There was a spelling list of 600 words that we went through, sight words. We did our reading, we played games as we went through, and the development and the enhancement of that young lad was outstanding. And that's why I've been involved in it. I'm a firm believer that education is the most important aspect of anyone's life.
What sort of problems do the children come along with? Do they come along with lack of concentration?
Some of them, you get a whole mixture. Some of them, there was a lack of concentration initially. You found that by breaking your hour up into the important part of playing a game to start with, you get the confidence of the child. We do our spelling, where if they have a word that they can't pronounce, we write it down and we go through it a couple of times. And then you'll have a game of snap, even with those words, just to reinforce that message. Some of them have a learning difficulty, and you're there just to help reinforce the work that's going on in the classroom.
How does it make you feel when you know you've made a difference in a child's life?
Well, again, it's over a 15-session period. I mean, from when you see the start and when you see the results at the end, and you think, wow, gee, I made a little bit of a difference to that child, especially in the 5 areas that they measure, and it's most rewarding. My first young boy now, I'm still with him 2 years later, and we come along every week to the school, and we currently making or painting up a little wooden grader, and we discuss things, we discuss how his life's going along. One aspect last year was he told me something of the dysfunctional aspect of his life. So I came and saw the principal, and it was fantastic because the feedback I received that indicated that it was the first time he talked to anyone about some of the issues that he was facing. You didn't realise you were doing it at the time, but to have that feedback was just so rewarding.
How old is he?
He's in grade 5, so he's about 9, I think, 9 or 10, yes. And he's a very nice young lad. Hopefully we can help him.
Just lastly, why do you care about children? I mean, because they're not your problem.
We've got our own grandchildren, and we saw with our own children, we saw the importance of reading, for example, and listening to a child. it's said before, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think this is part of it. I encourage anybody who has got the time on their hands, who doesn't have perhaps a hearing issue or whatever, just to volunteer and listen to a child read. You'll see after 3 or 4 weeks, you see the difference in the child. You see the happiness when you turn up and knock on the door and it's reading time, and it's a wonderful experience. That is even just hearing straight reading in any of the schools. But Reading for Life, well, it's a very rewarding program because it's a structured program. You get as much out of it as the child does.
11-year-old Charlotte from St Mary's Primary is a perfect example of the program's success. She speaks with confidence about her improved reading skills.
It was 15 sessions that I did it last year.
So how old were you then?
10.
And you're 11 now?
Yes.
In grade?
5.
Grade 5. Okay. What did you do together, your volunteer?
Oh, we played lots of games. We played spelling games. We played, with the spelling games, we played memory, snap, and we played board games with math and reading.
And what did you like the best? What was your favourite part?
All the reading that we did.
And what did you learn, do you think? New words?
Yes. And before I started the Reading for Life program, I didn't really like books. Then after, Mum couldn't get me to stop reading the books to go to bed.
Well, that's a good thing. So do you read more now?
Yes.
Than on the computer?
Yes.
What's the latest book you're reading?
Dear Dumb Diary.
Is that good?
Yes.
What's it about?
It's about this girl and her friend and a person she doesn't really like.
What type of job do you want to do when you grow up?
Become a singer.
Why is that?
Because I really love singing.
Well, that's good. Would you like to go on to The Voice?
Yes.
Who's your favourite singing artist?
Jessie J.
Why?
Because I love her music.
What sort of messages, what sort of songs does she sing?
All different sorts of songs.
Before you started the Reading for Life program, how were your grades?
Before I started the Reading for Life program, my reading level was 200, and then after the Reading for Life program, my reading level was 600.
What was your volunteer's name?
Emerald.
And do you think you'll be friends for a long time with Emerald?
Yes.
And why is that?
Because she's really nice and kind.
And there's other things that you can do together, maybe?
I do see her around a lot, and sometimes we go, when we see her at the shops, when we're having lunch or something, we always sit at a table together and eat lunch.
Everyone involved is proud of the results Reading for Life is achieving. Richard concludes by sharing the results.
Over 2015, the most recent result, the total for the children over the program, on sight words, the average improvement over the 15 sessions was 8 months. And one child improved by 1 year and 1 month. Knowledge of sounds, average improvement was 18%, with a maximum improvement of 57%. Reading self-concept, average improvement was exactly 7.5%, and maximum improvement was 15%, and confidence is very important. Reading accuracy, average improvement was 10 months, with a maximum of one student improving by 1 year and 10 months. And comprehension, average improvement was 8 months and one student improved by 1 year and 7 months. So that's from this specific program, Reading for Life, most of which are aimed at before children even start school, because that is the most vital time. According to the Australian Early Development Index, which is now called the Australian Early Development Census, the town has made huge gains.
Richard couldn't achieve the program's success without Stacey, a teacher from Wallaroo Primary School, Sue Lyons, principal at Hastings Primary School, and volunteers who collaborate together to help children with literacy issues. It's a concept that's been considered to roll out not only across the peninsula but across Australia. Thank you to Richard, Tom, and Charlotte for sharing their journey with the Reading for Life Literacy Program. This report is the first in a four-part series that focuses on the good work people do in local communities. Listen next week when we bring you another group of volunteers who make a difference to people's lives on the peninsula. What if we told you there is a place you can drop off your bras to support the benefits of breastfeeding and help support women living in developing countries? That's what's happening on Sunday the 31st of July at Osteopathy Connections in Frankston for the Peninsula Bra Drive Uplift Project. Andrea Rowe, spokesperson for the Uplift Project, fills us in with the details.
Well, this is a great chance to get your smalls out of the drawers and contribute in a big way. Basically, on the 31st of July, women across the peninsula are being asked to donate their unwanted bras, or the bras that they may not fit into any longer, or they may have bought and thrown in the back of the cupboard, to a global initiative called the Uplift Project. It's a great initiative. It's designed to donate particularly bras to disadvantaged communities. And this day, on the 31st of July, is being hosted by Osteopathy Connections in Frankston.
Where did the initiative come from to collect bras for women in developing countries?
Well, Uplift Project was actually created by a community of women who wanted to collect new and secondhand bras in good condition to distribute to disadvantaged communities. And it's been happening since 2005 that more than 1 million bras have been sent to regions in 11 Asian Pacific countries. And some of them, these are countries where bras are so expensive to purchase, or even the opportunity to access secondhand bras is seldom available. So it's born from that, and Osteopathy Connections, which is a business in Frankston, and who works with a lot of women who are either new mums who are breastfeeding, or women in their mature age. They've decided, let's get on board with this project and let's have a free health and wellness day and invite women on the same day to donate their bras and clean out the drawers as well. So I think it's a great opportunity for our local business to think globally and be involved as well.
Now, this bra drive coincides with World Breastfeeding Week, which is the 1st to the 7th of August. What's that promoting?
Well, World Breastfeeding Week, of course, we are very fortunate now to be in an era where we're actively promoting kids to have, or babies to have, the best start of their life. And promoting breastfeeding is a great way of, generally, it's been proven to improve the health and development of infants and the well-being of mums as well. So this is a week about informing a community, as well as celebrating breastfeeding as well, and just getting knowledge out there. So Lauren, who runs Osteopathy Connections, has a lot of clients who are new mums and also wants to, as an osteopath, help new mums who are struggling or who may be challenged a little bit with this part of their journey. She actually has an internationally accredited breastfeeder at the clinic that day who'll be answering questions and offering advice to breastfeeding women. And it's great to, you know, to connect women with lots of resources in our community and think about that breastfeeding is an integral part of really mothering, and it's filled with lots of emotions as well.
Is breastfeeding in developing countries widely encouraged?
Well, look, you would think it would be, but I must admit I've travelled through a lot of countries, and I do recall being in places like Guatemala and a lot of Central American countries particularly, where it was still actively promoted to feed your baby formula milk. Or there may have been mothers that were just exhausted and stressed and working and couldn't actually be there to feed their children as well. So I think there's a lot of different cultural messages in different countries. And also there's lots of challenges with the expectations of a mother as well. So I think World Breastfeeding Week is also about increasing the knowledge and advice globally, of course, and helping us understand the challenges. And I'm sure there'll be lots of stories told in World Breastfeeding Week.
How do people get on board? What do we do? Where do we go?
It's on Sunday the 31st of July at Osteopathy Connections, and their address is 307 Nepean Highway, Frankston. This event is happening from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Drop off your bras at any time, but while you're there, there's lots of free health and wellness little clinics and specialists there. It's all free. There's anything from nutritionists to breastfeeding, an accredited breastfeeding counsellor, to the osteopath talking about posture, giving you a little bit of a spine check. So it's a great way to also understand a little bit about osteopathy and what it does as well, without feeling like you're committing to something, or feeling a little bit of, if you're feeling a little bit intimidated as well. So Osteopathy Connections in Frankston, and their number is 9783 9041.
That address again, Osteopathy Connections, 307 Nepean Highway, Frankston, on Sunday the 31st of July. Get down and put your old bras to good use. That concludes our program for another week. If you have any news on the street you want to share with our team, please contact RPPFM on 5975 1234. Next week, Eye on the Peninsula will again bring you up to date with issues that matter to you. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 or 98.3 FM in Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rpfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website, and check out the Eye on the Peninsula Facebook page. Thank you to Deborah Maher, executive producer and reporter of Eye on the Peninsula, guests Brendan Telfer and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. And if you're interested in presenting your own radio program on RPPFM or reporting for Eye on the Peninsula, contact our station manager Brendan Telfer on 5975 1234. I'm Piers Cunningham. Thanks for your company.